Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Dhyan Urjo. Urjo is a mechanical engineer who built his profession in logistics and real estate to eventually venture into the stock market. Urjo has been involved in the Osho Meditation Center in New York for many years and is an Osho Meditation facilitator. Urjo is working on a new project to create a residential Osho Meditation Center near New York. Hey Urjo, welcome to the Love Osho podcast. How are you?
Hi Swaram, I'm very well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. Yeah, exciting. Now I'm in Rome and I'm loving it. That's the first interview from Italy, Rome, for a very long time. Okay, Urjo, I'm really looking forward to this chat. I'm very happy to have you on the show and discuss all about you and Osho. You're very active both in the business world due to your profession as well as in the world of Osho. I understand that you are working on a new exciting project related to a residential commune near New York, and I want to hear all about that in just a moment. But let's start from the beginning of how you came to know about Osho in the first place.
Yeah, sure. As you mentioned about the podcast, and it's been so long that all these thoughts started coming to me that how I met Osho. And I was pretty much energized with those thoughts because I don't think of it anymore. And then I was feeling very good for the interview. So thanks for having me. It was a while back, I was just a child, and my father, he never believed in God or temples. And, you know, I came from India. My parents were Hindu, and we had a big, fat family. Their functions almost twice a week. And he would openly say that he does not believe in God. He doesn't go to the temple. And this kind of gave me a different inspiration, a bold move. And it kind of always gave me that freedom from the beginning that I can do anything I want when it comes to God. I don't have to follow anybody. And then around, growing up, half of my family was in US. And when they come to India, they come like Bon Jovis, you know, they act like completely different. They wear different, they talk different, they eat different, and they present themselves like they're so much above. And it was kind of likable. I wanted to become something like that. I wanted to explore that culture. And I find myself in US at the age of 9 or 10. And I'm seeing that, and these guys, they act differently when they come to India, but when they're in US, they're not any different than folks in India. They're going to the same temples. They're doing the same things. And my dream of these folks that are different, more courageous or more rebellious, it's over in no time. So, you know, I was disappointed, to be honest, when I moved to the U.S. I was thinking that'll be a new beginning in my life in some ways. Then I moved back to India again a few years back later. And now I'm not able to settle anywhere. And I'm kind of like lonely, hanging out, not doing much, don't know what to do. And I usually spend most of my time at a tree nearby my house. I spend hours and hours with it. And time passes by. And later on in my very early teens, I had this French friend who quoted something about Krishna, Hitler, and Gandhi. And this is the first time I hear something very different. I've never heard anyone able to comment on these names. Like Krishna is a god. Mahatma Gandhi is also almost a god in India. And I'm like, wow, where did you hear this? And I knew this guy. He was more like a parrot. He would never be able to come up something like that easily. But you never know. I mean, a parrot could lead me to something new that I've never explored. And I asked him, where did you hear that? And he told me he was using that phrase more of a political move for his work or whatever. But I took it as a spiritual and went somewhere else. So I go to this place in Ahmedabad, India. I was probably 13 or 14 at that time. And this is the first time I'm meeting an Osho sannyasin. His name is Swami Dhyan Deepak. And I was, back then, I didn't know how to word it, but I was pretty much shocked to see his eyes. He was so calm. There was a depth in his eyes. He had nothing. He had no money. On the street, he was just selling books. He had nothing left. And he felt so content to me. I was just taken back. I was kind of like, wow. And that point, I wanted to know more about Osho. And back then, they were renting tapes. There were no CDs or anything. So you have to rent a tape. You can't buy it. I couldn't afford to buy it. My pocket money was 50 rupees a month. And that was way little than the tapes. But I'm like, I want to rent these tapes. And they're pretty expensive. I was wondering, how can I rent these tapes or books? Even books, you have to rent it. And the fees were like 200 rupees a month. So I'm like thinking, and I hesitantly asking, would you be able to give me two tapes for a couple of days and I'll give it back to you? And he kind of trusted me and he gave it to me without anything. And I went home and I listened to the tapes again and again. And this is where the first time I hear Osho's voice in Hindi, crisp, clear, very clear voice that kind of penetrates within me. And I didn't know how to word this back then, but this is how I feel still, that this voice is penetrating me somewhere. I could not ignore it. Sometimes I could not even understand what he was saying, but that voice keeps going inside me. And that's how it all started. This is the first time I met Osho, and I didn't even know his name was Osho. It was Acharya Rajneesh. That's the name that was famous in India at that time. And later on, just 2 days later, those tapes come in my father's hand. And my father was excited. He was asking me where I got them. And I said, well, this place, he rents it, and the rent is pretty expensive. He says, don't worry about the rent. Get me more. I'll pay for the rent. And my problem was solved miraculously. I didn't have to worry about the money as far as the renting Osho's tapes and books. So I did that for like every day, 4 or 5 hours a day for the next 6 months during the entire high school vacation. And that's a few months later, I tried Kundalini meditation for the first time as well. And I didn't understand meditation at all in those days. I just tried it.
I love it. You know, it's very interesting to hear the background of your family and this circle coming back to your father, who is the person who kind of opened up a bit the space for you to have a different approach to religion and God. And then he's the one that also fell in love with Osho because you brought those tapes. Amazing. So you started, you kind of didn't know anything about meditation. Osho was his voice. You got really kind of taken away. He was penetrating you. So tell us a little bit then, how did you progress and how you took sannyas?
Then I started college, and I would keep reading Osho's books. But I was in India at that time, and it was a little difficult because I didn't know anybody. I didn't know any sannyasins. There were not many centers. And in college, what happens is, if I were to speak of Osho, everyone would immediately jump on like sexual topics about free sex. And they would kind of get very vulgar and personal with me. So I couldn't really communicate well with them. I couldn't connect with them. I couldn't share with them. And every time I share, all I see is a sexual repression coming out of them in some ways, trying to satisfy what they want to hear. And I couldn't relate with that for some reason. So the journey kind of went, I don't know how it went, what it went, but I continued my education. I kept reading books. And at this point, I was just struggling mentally, financially, in every ways. And I decided to move back to US. I was a mechanical engineering student in India, and I moved back to US. And now I'm even more troubled because I'm all by myself. I have no money, a car that needs everything. And I'm still thinking of connecting with Osho sannyasins and doing Osho meditations. So I Googled a few things when I'm back in the US, and I was 22 at that or 23 at that time. And somebody told me that there was a center in New York City. So I called and they said, yeah, come, you're welcome to join. That was Satyapriya. And she has been an Osho sannyasin since the early 70s. And she's been running that center for 30 years or something. I go there, and the first time I'm seeing a Western sannyasin. And this is the second Osho sannyasin I ever met. And again, I'm just blown away. Like, you know, when I hear Osho, I always get this feeling of courageous, daring personality who is not afraid to speak anything. The wilderness, the freedom. That part I could not find in a lot of Indian sannyasins. But this is the first time when I met Priya, she represented all that. The freedom she had to speak anything, to courageously say what's going on inside her, not to influence anyone, but just expressing herself. That made me feel like I want to become something like her. I was just, you know, 23, 24, and this inspired me so much. It kind of filled me up with so much energy that I'm like, wow, I didn't know this was possible. And all the credit goes to Osho, how he kind of opens up slowly and slowly. And, you know, there it's very easy to wear a maroon robe and a mala and do a silent meditation and be in silence and never express anything that goes on within us about sex or jealousy or anger or hate or greed or anything. But the real meditation to me, what I feel is like when someone is able to express themselves, whatever is going on, and not judging that situation, just expressing what is happening. And she was able to represent that. So I took sannyas. I wanted to become something like that. I wanted to learn and experience that part of the life within me. And at that time, I was very much in love with Osho world, Osho sannyasins. And the love affair has just deepened with the sangha that I just met. So it's very easy for me to jump in and take sannyas. And so I did. It was amazing. When I took sannyas, I was gifted an Osho pitcher and a mala. And for no reason, I started crying. I don't know how that happened, really. This is the first time I ever cried out of joy inside me or gratitude inside me. I never did that before. I didn't know that would even happen. And I sent a form. We had to mail it to Pune, and then they would mail a letter with the swan and the logo, and they'll write the new name and send it back. So that's how I got my new name, Urjo Dhyan, and I changed that name legally as well in the US.
Wow, that's a bold move. I didn't go that far. Wow, that's really cool. I just wanted to pick up on what you mentioned just at the beginning about the sexual comments that people would bring forward as soon as you mentioned the name Osho. And I have to say, we have a video on YouTube that has nearly 2 million views. And there are just people hugging after a dynamic meditation we did in London back, I don't know, when we were living in London. And we still today, 2021, there are almost every day some people from India writing comments, making some very heavy sexual references just because people are hugging. It's a beautiful video where people are connecting. It's not in sexual whatsoever, but in the mind of some people in India, there is an association with sex, and then they go on with comments and against Osho and all of that. And I find it like bizarre. And that makes me think and appreciate even more how courageous was Osho in 1960s to go around India talking about sexual freedom within the context. I mean, what he did is incredible. It's even more outrageous that whatever he would say against all the religions of the world in America, even the 93 Rolls Royces, to me is not as outrageous and dangerous as what he did in India back then, talking about sexual repression in 1960s, and perhaps he started even before. So, well, that's just a thought. I love the feeling that how you expressed your meeting with the Sanyasin in New York, and it's a beautiful opportunity to also honor her work and give her energy and love to Sagarpriya for all the beautiful work she did in New York for so many years. And so I'm wondering now, many years have passed and the world changes so fast. What does it mean for you to be a Sanyasin in the day-to-day life? Because you had described that kind of inner freedom that you felt and that led you to take sannyas. And then how do you then live in the actual real life day-to-day?
Well, when I took sannyas, right, and after taking sannyas, it's not like everything changes forever. There is still all that inside of me. And what has given is more like, how I take it now is a small torch or a small light where I can focus wherever I need to work on myself. And I try to work. Of course, I don't know how to work, what to work, but then little glimpses would start coming up. Like there is so much anger inside me. There is coming from India, you're not supposed to look at another girl, being even a young guy. And if you see the Indian Hindi films, they're all about love and they go super full. But still, in real life in India, you're still not allowed to look at a girl. And if you're having an affair, you're a bad person. Everybody judges you bad. They tell you on your face to the girl and the guy. And now I grew up a few years over there with this kind of environment. And I grew up a few years in the U.S., they don't care. I mean, it's a date. It's normal. And you're supposed to know the other person better and explore yourself through that. So there's both sides that I was learning. And like you mentioned earlier, people would mention about Osho's sexual related topic. And even in New York, that was not any different. I remember there was this guy who would tell Priya that, "You guys believe in free sex, right?" And she would tell in front of everyone, loud and clear, says, "Yes, we do, but you pay for it." And that was like, wow, yes. If it's not a natural thing, you are paying for it in one or other way. And to me, without the real feelings, all that is just disgusting. So just the ability to say to the person that, yes, we do, but you guys pay for it. It was very mind blowing for me. And slowly I come across many sannyasins. And the beauty about this older sannyasin is whenever there is a moment, like a real life situation, they would somehow be able to connect that situation with whatever Osho has to say in that kind of situation. And that was very helpful. That was very enlightening in that very moment. So I loved being in the group of Osho sannyasins. I went there two or three times a week from New Jersey, drove there 2 hours, each hour each way for like 10, 12 years. This is what I did. It changed my life. And one day, I was this is just in the beginning times. there was a lot of going on inside me, and I was just frustrated and angry, and I was telling Priya this and that. And that's when I was introduced to dynamic meditation for the first time. When I did that meditation, it was like, wow, I'm allowed to scream and curse. You're not allowed to do that in US or India. And how do you deal with that? I'm like, wow, this is a good feeling inside me that I can let this energy that's stuck inside me go away from me. I can come out of it. All these different meditation techniques, I started coming across and I explored them. I went inside many times with ease, and sometimes not with ease, but kept going. And the Sangha was such, the whole group of sannyasin was such that it would help each other in some ways. And later on, couple of years later, I started visiting Pune ashrams. I did all the therapies there. And I come across this therapy called Osho Mystic Rose. When I heard of it, I was like, wow, I've been wanting something like this. I was always able to cry. And sometimes I would go on a long drive and cry. Or sometimes I would go in an open playground in the midnight and cry because I felt the need inside me to get this sadness out of me. And Mystic Rose just allowed that. I participated in that program and I was able to cry like I never thought I would cry, like deep and loud, without any fear, without any judgments of me judging or them judging me. I was just in the process. And Osho is so brilliant that I'm a little sad that not everyone is able to use his techniques, that you can come out. I was able to come out of so many different aspects that I was stuck. I didn't even know I was stuck. I didn't know that how much I could not express without these techniques. And once I did a couple of Mystic Rows, now it's kind of like very easy for me to laugh and cry. I mean, I don't really care if somebody judges me or gives me a look. I mean, it doesn't bother me. But back then, to come out, all these techniques were needed, and the support from other sannyasins to encourage for these techniques, that was needed. And it was very loving for all the support that I received. And it went on and on. It just like, you know, they say it's difficult to be a sannyasin and continue the journey. But how I find it is, it gets better and better and worse and better and better. And that's how it was. It was like a process. Sometimes it's not easy. And sometimes it's just difficult. But the love affair kept growing. It's just very individual feeling that inside me makes me feel my entire life more obligated to Osho's work. I don't know what else to do. I don't know how to give back. I don't know the gratitude that I receive. How do I give anything back? And that's where I kind of started getting the ideas that we should have a center or something, and we should be all together, at least for the next generation, and we should do more meditations. So that was the thought process growing inside me, and that kind of continued later on in the years.
Okay, well, that leads very easily to the next part when I want to ask you to talk more about this new project you have. But I just wanted to pick up on that thing you mentioned about the Mystic Rose and dynamic meditation. I mean, it's my experience as well that dynamic meditation, no mind, Mystic Rose are extremely powerful and effective and are not as practiced as many of the other therapy groups that are on offer within the world of Osho. And I think it's a miss because without taking away the value of some of the very powerful and beautiful work that some therapists do, but dynamic, no mind, Mystic Rose, if you do that, you don't need anything else, in my experience, or very little. It's very individual, so I can't generalize, but there is definitely a not balanced proportion between how much energy and time people dedicate to therapy groups compared to those beautiful techniques left by Osho that are extremely effective. And, you know, I just encourage everyone to do that a little bit more and see what their experience would be. So, my friend, tell us a little bit more about this beautiful project that you have in mind in terms of giving back, as you said.
There is a little story about the meditation that I'd like to share before I jump into that. I wanted to meet Osho. Like, I know it's not possible, right? But there's this burning desire in me that even after he's left his body, I want to meet him. Something inside me tells me that it's possible, and my mind tells me it's impossible. So I struggle with this reality, and I just don't know how to handle it. And sometimes it gets very painful. I cry in the night. Sometimes if I hear a Osho song, it comes in tears. Like, I just don't know what to do. These guys are so lucky they met and they did this with them and this happened to them and that happened to them. All these explosions that these older sannyasins are talking about, I just want to meet him once. And one day in my dreams, I had a dream of Osho. And he was so powerful in my dream that he comes out of the car and he gives me the look right in my eyes. And it was a moment of silence and explosion at the same time. And I woke up from that dream very relaxed, not wanting to go anywhere. There was this charged air inside my bedroom. I was sleeping by myself. And there was some feeling inside me that tells me that, yes, this is how master's eyes, when you see inside them, this is the feeling. Later on, a few years later, I met another enlightened person. He's not a master, but he works with meditators and he has an ashram in India. And he told me that Osho was like a tsunami. Anyone who was even further away from ocean, they also got a taste of ocean without knowing if they were even near the ocean or not. But for those of you who are never met Osho, they have to work. They have to have more trust and relax. And one thing is sure, that the master will never, ever leave you alone, even in your darkest side. And those words kind of went inside me, changed and relaxed me that, yes, there is that feeling that master never leaves. After that, I started doing very aggressive meditation. I started doing like every day in the morning while I was busy with something and I didn't get enough sleep. I didn't get the right food, but I would continue meditation every day in the morning. And boy, it exhausted me in no time. I got sick with it. Physically, I couldn't take it because I was not doing rightly. I was too aggressive. I was not resting well. I was not eating the right food. And then I come across a book of Osho in Hindi called Hasiba Kheliba Dhariba Dhyanam. It means enjoy and do meditation with ease. Then I'm trying to figure out, because I've heard Osho so much, and maybe I've never heard him yet, but I want to do these meditations that I can experience what he always talks about. And I tried aggressively. It didn't work. I tried in some whatever way that I thought I'm doing right. It didn't work. And a while back, I heard the story of Baba Alauddin Khan, the greatest musician known to India, and also talks about him many times. He met him many times. And his son is, Ali Akbar Khan, and all his students are Ravi Shankar and all of that famous. So Ali Akbar Khan, he was very young, and his father, who was a master musician, his whole house was a school of music. And in his early teens, he would play whatever instrument and keep on changing instrument. And one day, Alauddin Khan comes and tells him that, son, today, now you choose one instrument and just practice that from now onwards. You're not going to touch any other instruments, and this is going to be your instrument. and life will show you the way from that. That kind of stayed within me. I didn't really understand the story back then, but when Osho came and said a few words when he met Maharishi Yogi in the 1969 in Kashmir or somewhere in the Himalayas, he expressed that there is no such thing as a meditation technique. You can follow the technique, but at some point, the technique is left behind. And that's when meditation happens. So I tried that, okay, let me try this. Let me try to stick with one meditation instead of trying different meditations every week. And then this COVID happened and it helped us. We had so much time and so much freedom to do meditations, and we chose another Brahma meditation, and we just finished 1 year doing that every single day. It literally disciplined our life in terms of meditation, how we prepare even a day before. I have to go to sleep early. I cannot go to sleep at any time. And how we eat the food. So the whole balance came to me with COVID. And there was I'm very grateful for that time that COVID has allowed us to do these daily meditations. And this is the first time I'm slowly starting getting the taste of what Osho meditation techniques are. It required that consistency and dedication and time for a certain period of 9 months to 1 year to get that taste. And I'm just slowly getting into it. And I'm very grateful for those techniques that Osho has created.
Wow, that's so very beautiful. And something I've noticed, and it happened to me as well, is that Osho is so vast. He gave so much. He spoke about everything and beyond. And he gave so many different techniques compared to other traditional paths where you have, you know, one technique or very little choice. And that's such richness, and it's so beautiful. But at the same time, it has a downside because it can be confusing, or it can be that, you know, you tend to want to experiment and try so many different things. And before you find what works, you know, it can take a while. What happened to me as well, at some point, only when I started doing regularly, every day, one technique that was for me dynamic meditation, which I did for 4 years, then is when really life changed completely. Otherwise, you know, meditating one day yes, one day no, or sometimes nothing completely, I don't think that's the best way to transform. So totally, totally, totally resonate with you. It's important to have a discipline, which is not imposed by someone, but it's your own understanding that you want to transform. You want to really experience what Osho is talking about. And for that, you need to practice. Like the musician who plays the same instrument for a long time is the same with technique and practice. So totally agree with you.
Yes, it's a feeling that when it's shared, it becomes more communion in a way. About your question, I think I answered something differently when you asked me the question about creating an ashram. It was a plan. We started working on it, but we didn't have enough money to make a residential ashram of 30, 40 people. We didn't have enough sannyasin either. In the Northeast New Jersey to be able to manage that. So we're still trying. And in the meantime, we have created this small center in New Jersey that we built for like 20, 30 people can meditate together. And we practice various meditation techniques here at our New Jersey center, like Kundalini, Dynamic, and another Brahma. And we plan to do more too. We have done a couple of events where we have like a 2 or 3 day events here. But we definitely still have the plan to continue to open an ashram. And when the right time comes in, I think it will just happen. But right now we're more like in a waiting process due to COVID and other things. We're still looking for land and ideas every now and then. And more than just opening the ashram, the feeling behind is to grow richer by associating with sannyasins. and to be able to share things and to be able to, you know, commune together. The idea is a little tricky. I don't feel like I want to be away from the world completely and make a small igloo of just sannyasin. Not that way. It's just more of a communion way. And another reason is many friends on a practical basis, they're not married, they're single. I myself have no kids or anything. So we kind of, when we stay together and when we eat and meditate together, there is a whole growth that happens within all of us. And I want to experience that and probably work towards that envision.
That's beautiful. And I just want to perhaps go a little bit deeper on the motivation why you want to dedicate so much energy, effort, and money to create this, to work on this project, because it's clearly a very difficult project to materialize, especially in New York or nearby New York. You know, it's very expensive. It's very hard to sustain financially. I mean, before in the 70s, 80s, life was a little bit different. It's always been difficult to raise the money and make it work, but I think the social context was different. Nowadays, to pay the rent of such a big space, it's inconceivable unless you have a very functioning business plan or someone that donates a massive amount of money. So yeah, I'm wondering, like, are you prepared? And what is the fire? You know, you mentioned already, but I want to really understand a little bit more, because I had that vision for a while and now I completely changed my mind and I'm far away. I don't want to create such project, and I wouldn't even like to live in a commune. So yeah, I'd love to go a little bit deeper because it's a big commitment.
There are mixed feelings. The first feeling is that I never met Osho, but I feel that I've received so much from Osho that my entire life is full with it. And there are many other friends that feel that way. So we want to be able to hold this energy for us and also for future generations to come. Frankly speaking, there has never been any, I have not seen any successful project like this happen in the US. So that makes it very challenging. And I like to take those kind of challenges. I don't know if it's my ego or if it's something, I don't know. But to me, I connect it more as a love affair. But there is also a part of me inside me tells me that since this is not doable, it has never been done, let me go for it. That part is there. And right now, I always feel that, you know, when I was introduced to Osho, the journey was not possible as an individual. It was a little bit, but not to a level that it became possible when I started associating with a lot of like-minded sannyasins. So if there is that provided, there is more growth to myself and others. And that is kind of more like motivating and inspiring to spread Osho's work and vision. And there is so much of joy inside, and it gives me so much energy every time I'm able to spread something of Osho anywhere. It just fills me up with so much energy and love and all of those feelings that, hey, I was able to do this for this person. I was able to give him a book. I was able to mention a few words of Osho and invite him for meditation, and he came, and I feel grateful for that kind of work. It just nourishes me somehow.
Absolutely. Look, it's so beautiful, and I really understand what you mean, I think, because I empathize with you, because that's exactly how I feel or felt. You know, whenever we did events and shared Osho, we were the ones benefiting the most, because you receive so much energy coming from, I don't know, it's incredible feeling. So we were the first to be happy to do it for our own, you know, motives. And then when it comes to the point of giving others the same opportunity that we received to experience and go deeper in the process of the journey with Osho, I also felt almost responsible, because that's happened to me. Like, I came across Osho through a book, and then I went to the Osho Center in Rome, then I went to India, to Pune, that at that time was really buzzing with energy, and my life changed so much. And it's important for people who come to Osho nowadays to then find other sannyasins or other lovers of Osho, or a place where they can experience that energy. Because with Osho, it's not just about, you know, reading a book or doing a technique. It's that overwhelming energy that overtakes you and that really transformational. So, well, look, I really wish you all the very best with your projects. And, you are the right person because you have a good motivations behind. It's just really financially challenging. So I hope that you find a way around that.
Even if it's financially challenging, I have a feeling it'll happen one day, one or the other way. Because when I see the life of those sannyasins who have dedicated everything to Osho, like when I see Priya, when I see Chaitanya Kirti, they're working every day to spread Osho's work. And of all the people that I came across in my life, I find their life more richer than anyone else. They may not have all the money, they may not have all the fame, but I find their souls are rich. And the process is such that it makes the other person very rich and content. And I just want to experience that and share that as well.
Super beautiful. I love it. Very inspirational. So, my friend, we are heading towards the end. I have a couple of final questions for you, unless there is anything you want to add, anything I didn't ask that you want to add before I shoot the last two questions.
Not that I know. I'm thankful for this interview because I never verbalized a lot of things. I never give it a thought. And as I see it, a lot of things becomes verbalized and therefore a little bit more clear to me within myself. So I'm thankful to you.
I'm thankful to you. You know, you articulate very beautifully what you have inside. And as I often say in this podcast, when we talk about things like this, we give energy to the thoughts and we plant seeds. So by saying and talking about this project and getting excited about it, it's again a step in the direction of this to materialize one day. So the last two questions are, first, what is, in your view, Osho's greatest contribution to the world?
The very feeling of love, not the word love. What is experienced to me? No, I'm not saying it. I'm not able to say that rightly in words. I'm not able to say it right in words, so it has to come. Maybe I'll skip the question and come back to it a little bit later.
No worries. I do appreciate if someone were to ask me that question like that, I would be also go blank. You know, it's so big, Osho's contribution to the world. Like, okay. So let's try the second one, the other one. What is the most beautiful gift you personally received from Osho?
A sannyas. That's the biggest thing for me, that I can be accepted the way I am, the good and the bad, the white and the black, all of it, and continue the journey from where I am, not whom I should be or how I should be. And that acceptance to me is everything.
Wonderful. Urjo, look, it's been really a pleasure to talk to you and feel your excitement, your project, your passion, your love for Osho. And you really remind me of everything I felt for a long time. And I still feel in a way about doing things for Osho, and as beautiful. And I thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing it with all the Osho lovers and friends.
Thank you very much, Ram. Much love to you as well in Italy.
Thank you. Big hug and lots of love.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.